why I'm still wearing my headphones.
I don't know why you're wearing your headphones either. We're like 4 feet from each other. Hi, everyone. Welcome to episode 126 of the Professional Book Nerds podcast presented by Overdrive. This is Adam, and Jill is here as well. Hi, Jill.
Hi, Adam.
What's up?
Not much. How are you?
I'm good. We're recording this on a Friday. And
not just any Friday.
Not just any Friday?
Cavs games night.
Oh, we did this yesterday, too.
I had, like, the weirdest sense of deja vu, because I'm pretty sure we did this last year, and it actually worked out in our favor.
Listen, by the time everyone hears this, it'll be Monday.
We'll
know either way. It's looking pretty grim for our Cavaliers.
Yeah.
I'm kind of sad.
I know.
We did an interview yesterday with an author, and it's not coming out for, like, a month, but he was talking about not counting out the Cavs, and neither of us wanted to say anything, A, because we're bummed out, because at the time of this recording, we're down 3-0, and also, it's like a month from now, and it's just one of those podcast things where,
yeah,
when you're talking to people, and he even said, he's like, this will not come out for a while,
yeah,
but I'm going to say this anyway. Anywho, also, peek behind the curtain work-wise, this has been the longest week ever. I've hated this week.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't.
There's some just all of the things have been so busy.
Oh, well, that's fair. That's fair.
Yeah.
I understand that.
And I've been single dog parenting for the past couple of days because my wife is I was doing a bunch of traveling, and now she's doing a bunch of traveling, so my puppies were very confused with me this week, but
that'll happen.
Anyway, how are you doing?
I'm good.
Good. What's going on in this episode?
So, in this episode, I got to interview Jessamine Stanley,
mm-hmm.
who is, like, rock star Instagram yogi. She is amazing.
Yeah, just all around.
Just
badass.
All around incredible. Yeah, she's a badass. And so she was at Cuyahoga County Public Library, and I was asked to come interview her, although her book tour has been sort of styled as they've been billed as like a conversation with Jessamine Stanley.
Mm-hmm.
So it was very much like I went with questions and didn't use any of them.
Yeah.
So the format is similar but a little different. But I mean, she's been with some pretty big hitters over the rest of her book tour.
Yeah.
I'm like.
Like you.
Well, no, but I mean, I'm like, I'm now like 2 degrees away from like Lindy West and stuff like that, which
mm-hmm.
is pretty awesome. So.
You so fancy.
I'm so fancy. So that's what this episode is. It's our interview.
Also, peek behind the curtain. This was supposed to go up like a week ago. Our lovely friends at the library sent, every time we do a live interview at like a live on stage interview like this, if we don't do it too often, but when we do, they then send us all the files the next day. Neither you nor I downloaded the files when we were supposed to. So I was at BEA, and you were here, and neither
mm-hmm.
of us had the files, so we had to scramble a little bit.
And go back and get them. Thank you.
Thanks, Cuyahoga County Public Library.
Media Services Department.
Yep.
We appreciate it.
We love you guys.
We do.
I love this conversation. I think the best shows we have are the ones where, like, yeah, we have a lot of stuff prepared, but it just turns into a conversation.
Right.
Those are my favorite.
Here's what this was, and it was interesting. Like, I got there early, and our contact there saw me, and he's like, oh, Jessamine's here, too. You want to go hang out with her? Oh, sure, I'll go hang out with her. So, I walk in. She gives me a hug. I'm like, oh, my God, Jessamine Stanley's hugging me. And so we're just, like, chatting, and I had asked her about her previous events, because I knew she'd been with, like, Lindy West and Virgie Tober and, like, all these really big heavy hitters in sort of this world. And she said they all sort of picks different topics that they kind of wanted to talk about, you know, with regards to what she does, because we discussed it, but she hits a lot of intersectionality. There's a lot of different,
mm-hmm.
I don't even know, but demographics, I guess, that she fits into. And so depending on who she was with, the conversation gets guided in a different way to base on sort of what they want to talk about. So it's not all yoga. There's a lot of it, but sort of how yoga fits into different areas of life.
Yeah.
And the world.
And again, she's just an all-around wonderful human being.
She is.
So
she's pretty cool.
I was I was very excited for you to get to do this. And
it was a good time.
Also, this was one of those where when they asked you to do it, like, you and I had a quick conversation. I had no place in this one. This was you guys. And it was, because, like, we can tell sometimes there's some authors where it's like, one of us should just talk to that person.
Yeah.
And just leave it at that. And then there's other times when we're like, we both should do this together because we're both awesome. I don't know. I think I've talked too many times today.
That's fair.
Yeah. But no, this was an awesome conversation. So, as always, good job by you.
Thanks.
If people want to get a hold of us, what should they do, Jill?
They can find us on Twitter at ProBookNerds, or they can email us directly at ProfessionalBookNerds@Overdrive.com.
They sure can.
And they can also leave comments on our Libsyn thing. I don't know if you saw this, but Don
Katagage?
Don left one about our Marcus Sedgwick interview.
Oh, yeah, because I can tell you why. So, Don, we had her on a while ago. Her last book was called, in the U.S. it's called And the Trees Crept In. In the U.K. it's called The Creeper Man, which I think I like almost better. They're both really good, but she's wonderful. She's one of the authors where not only did I chat with her for our podcast, we just became friends.
We're friends. Yeah.
So she tweeted at Marcus Sedgwick, was like, please write another book soon. And I saw that because she and I are friends on Twitter and Instagram and also Life.
Mm-hmm.
And so I sent her a message. I was like, you know that he was on our podcast with Jill? And she was like, what? And so she would listen to it, and she tweeted telling all of her followers to listen to it. So Dawn, if you're listening to this one, just always, I love you. And she has a new book coming out next year. So also, I'm traveling to the UK next year with my wife. And Dawn was like, you should come stop and say hi to me. And I was like, yeah.
You should do that.
You guys, actually, all of you should follow Dawn on Instagram, because when she goes, like, her Instagram stories are always her exploring castles in Wales and Scotland and England. And hashtag, I have FOMO when I look at it. Anyway, we're rambling now. We're not talking about anything.
We're rambling. It's a Friday. Okay. So.
Okay. Yes. So you can reach us, send us emails. Thank you, guys. We love you for all your emails, all that stuff, Twitters, all those things. Anything else?
No, I think that's all.
Cool. This is going to be a long one. Sorry, guys. I hope you all enjoy this wonderful interview that Jill did with Jessamine Stanley on the Professional Book Nerds podcast.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Marcia Camino, and I am founder and director of Pink Lotus Yoga, a yoga studio in Lakewood, Ohio. It's my pleasure and honor to introduce to you tonight's speaker. Jessamine Stanley, yogi, instructor, writer, and inspiration to thousands, has a yoga bio that I can sum up as follows. She's certified in Asheville's Yoga Center's 230-hour teacher training program. As an instructor, she teaches live and online. She contributes her writings on yoga to Mind Body Green, Wanderlust, and Elephant Journal, blogs regularly, and is devoted writing to people who post questions to her, her motto being, "You can ask me anything." Jessamine's been featured and profiled by a variety of international and national media outlets, including Good Morning America, The Daily Mail, New York Magazine, The Sunday Times, New York Times, Women in the World, and People Magazine, among others. Tonight, Jessamine will be interviewed by Jill Grunewald, author of Running with a Police Escort, Tales from Back of the Pack. And she's also co-host of Overdrive's Professional Book Nerds podcast. And now please welcome Jessamine Stanley.
How's it going? Oh, shit. That was so generous. Like, way generous than I think I personally deserve. Where am I at? Where
right
are you
there.
At? Right here? Right. Okay, yeah. Cool. Hello. Hi.
Is that a big group?
Yeah, hey. Did you pack the crowd? Your friends? Are these plants?
They're not plants.
Are they going to ask, like, really specific
here,
questions?
I know at least where one is.
Heard.
Probably others that I will spot eventually as I'm
whatever. Yes, there are people here.
Can I make one note before we say anything
else?
Please do. There is a Snapchat filter for this event, and I know that the marketing team at my publisher would love for y'all to utilize it. It's me practicing yoga in my underwear, if that's, like, exciting for you.
What? That doesn't sound like you.
You know, I guess it is a bit of a reach when you think about the whole Instagram thing, but no. Yeah. Anyway, for you.
All right.
What's up?
Not much. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
How are you guys doing?
How are you doing?
Hey. That doesn't sound... No, like,
you're
seriously.
You're like medium?
How are you doing? Hey, I told you.
You cued that. That was nice.
Not my okay. first time at the rodeo
so
here.
I'm shouting into this.
So, what do you want to talk about?
I don't know. The weather? Food? I've eaten some really good food.
She had
this place. They had zucchini pasta, and I was like, "What, Cleveland? I see you,
Cleveland man."
Really good, yeah. A vegan. There was a vegan brownie sundae. I was like, "What? I just got here, and y'all got the good vegan food? All right,
Cleveland. Yeah, we are Cleveland Rocks.
I'm gonna remember. I didn't realize
Cleveland Rocks. Yeah, good stuff. No, but like seriously, what do you want to talk about?
Oh well, I mean, we can kind of talk about whatever you find to be interesting.
Okay.
Yeah.
So how many of you have already read Jessamine's book?
That's like a lot of
people. Were you expecting less?
I don't know. I didn't. There's no test about it, so I didn't assume that anyone would.
I have read it, and I loved it. Oh. And everyone else who eventually will read it will also love it. Mm. Don't be weird.
I'm going to be weird.
Okay.
I feel it's a weird thing to be in this space of like talking about a practice that is not about the ego and then be like, oh yeah, thanks for saying that. You know what I mean? So it's a weird place.
I do.
Yeah.
I do. Yoga, we have been talking a little bit backstage. Yoga is in a weird place right now.
Ooh, yeah, it is. I think that a lot of people are really more obsessed with, or whenever they say that they practice yoga or they're excited about yoga, it's really more like they're excited about their yoga stuff. Like they're excited about their yoga mat, they're excited about like that studio that they found, they're excited about this retreat that they went on, and like no shade on any of that because I love mats, I love clothes, I mean like I'm not. But it's, that has so little to do with the practice. And then whenever you get it kind of on a global scale where there's all these brands involved and then there's, and then especially when you focus it on social media and how people are like, this is what a yoga practice looks like. You know, it's going to this specific studio X number of times a week and it's, you know, buying this coconut water and like going to this location. And so little of it has to do with, you know, looking within yourself and finding that gray space and looking for the darkness and the light. It's not even about that. It's just about projecting this idea of, and that I've noticed a lot of people kind of, you say the strength of your yoga practice is directly related to like the number of times you practice per week or where you practice or just all this stuff. And then there's people who are like, I hear this all the time. My poses are not good enough for Instagram. And I'm just like, the fuck? That is not okay. You know, like that's not, that has nothing to do with this practice whatsoever. And I think I kind of found myself in a place of being able to show a different variation on that. But I don't set out to show a different version of
right.
that. It's just kind of like.
That you just do you.
Yeah,
I'm literally just doing it. It just happens to be a different variation.
Yeah.
I think that the idea that, that strikes me, the idea that their poses aren't good enough for Instagram. Like, that's really sad.
It's sad for a couple different reasons. The reason that it really gets under my skin is because there's no such thing as, like, not good enough with this. That however you're practicing it, is that's right. Like, that's not, it's, like, yeah, okay, so there are... Let's use triangle pose as the example. So, like, yes, there are specific points of triangle pose where you're trying to hit. There are certain alignment things that will help you to understand your body in a different way, that will help you truly tune into your breath in a very specific way. But, you know, when it comes right down to it, everybody's body is different. Everyone is coming from a different set of experiences. And there's no reason that we need to continue with this, like, truly like, you know, game of saying that, oh yeah, one person's is better than the other. Like, cause it's just not the case. Like, if you're using blocks, if you're down on one knee, if you're bending the knee, if you're doing all of these things, are totally fine. If you have only one arm and you're using, like, I mean, it's like, if you can't see, if you cannot hear, it doesn't matter. The experience of the pose is unique to you. And that is perfect. And that is beautiful. But that is also the antithesis of the general message of our society, which is like, we're living in a time of assimilation, of everyone just trying to look and act exactly the same. And then this practice falls into that exact same category. And it's just really, well, it's nauseating to watch. But then at the same time, yoga kind of makes you apathetic to stuff, because then at the same time, it's like, well, that's the yoga. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, that's the, and then that, if someone is caught up in that, then that's their yoga. And there's no way, because I have no way to shade that, because like, I'm in my own shit. How can I possibly like look at somebody else and be like, you don't need to be worried about blah blah blah, because I'm over here, I need to worry about my stuff. But at the same time, I do think that there's way too much obsession over like, my pose has to look like this, that, or the other thing in order to even be worthwhile, you know. And because apparently it matters if other people can see it.
Yes, which I think is sort of the greater issue. Mm-hmm. It sort of speaks to this. Don't get me wrong, I love social media. I love social media. I'm on social media. I have a blog. Like, I talk about things, and you put pictures out there. But when you put pictures out there and you put your life out there, you want it sometimes to look a certain way, even if that's not entirely true. Mm. And it's hard to be authentic knowing other people are going to see it. And I'm not yet at a point where I can let haters just be haters. Yeah. I'm not there yet.
Yeah.
So, that's like, real. It's that constant worry of what they're going to say or what they're going to do. And I, you have to, though, remember that everybody's doing that.
And this is what I talk about this in the book, how everyone is obsessed with what everyone else thinks about each other. This, I don't mean to interrupt you, but you're hitting on something that is so big.
Yes.
I think that, because people ask me all the time, like, how are you so confident to just talk about whatever you want or put whatever picture on there that you want? And I'm just like, why are we so afraid of one another? You know what I mean? Because it's coming down to this place of like, first of all, we talk about the haters, right? Trolls. My thing is like, why do you have time to troll somebody? You know what I mean? Like, I don't even have time to read the comments from trolls, let alone True. Be like in. Some people put a lot of thought into it too. You know, like, they're just,
it's like a full-time job for them.
No, absolutely. And so when I see that, especially when it's like you are hating, I'm just like, damn, you must be having the worst day. You know, like, you're probably dealing with some shit that I don't even want to think about. Like, you are at home without people that love you. Like, you are really in a state. I'm cool. Like, I'm chilling. I'm not concerned. The only reason I'm even going to see it is if I like click the wrong button somewhere. So like, when I feel like I'm sure that my opinion on this will change. But after seeing so many people be hateful about shit that I really believe, and that I'm not, just because you don't like it doesn't mean I'm gonna stop thinking it. I'm just kind of coming to a place of feeling like, if I don't believe it enough to embody it and to have somebody come up to me and say that they dislike, if I don't believe enough in myself, then there's no reason to even show up. You know what I mean? Like, why bother projecting something that isn't real whenever I know who I am? And I think that if I say something and somebody else disagrees with it, maybe that's why we have social media, so that we can actually hear one another for once. Because I do feel like that, so what you were saying about like, yeah, I do love social media, just as a disclaimer, I was thinking like, I don't love social media, honestly. Like, I feel really apathetic towards social media, because I think it's highly problematic for a lot of reasons. But I also think that there's got to be a reason that we can all communicate like this right now. It can't just be so that we can all show, like, look at my beach handstand and look at this shit that I ate for breakfast and look where I went on vacation. Like, that can't be it, you know?
Right.
Like, it's got to be, because we're also living in a time where everybody has, like, there's so many different opinions, and we're living in a time of complete and utter chaos. And,
yes.
like, there's, I feel like the reason that we can all communicate like this is so that we can actually be honest with one another. And frequently, honesty means that at least one person is not going to like what you think or say. But that's awesome. That's awesome for them and for you.
Right.
So that you're empowered to believe whatever it is that you believe, and then they're empowered to believe whatever it is that they want to believe. And then you can actually have a dialogue. And I've definitely had some, I had some times, especially in the last year, where I've said or posted something that a lot of people did not appreciate. And my feeling with that every time is just kind of like, fuck them. You know? I mean, if you don't like it, there's a million other things to look at on the internet.
No,
and
that's true.
I don't feel like there's any reason to be anything other than who I am. But it is hard to get there, so I feel you completely.
Yeah. Not there yet. Check it back with me in a couple of years.
Feel you.
Yeah, I think this, I mean, the social media thing is interesting because social is in the name. It's meant to be interaction, and yet so much of it is very one-sided. And I mean, and Instagram is kind of like this. Like, you post your thing, and then, like, that's just you, and you put it out there, and maybe people comment. But it's lacking a sort of interaction to some degree. Mm-hmm. But I think it is, there are opportunities there to have those conversations. But you're right.
Yeah.
It's tricky because not everyone's going to walk away happy. But
yeah, and I mean, like, conversations, if you want to have them. I feel like it's, you know, it's social. But at the same time, like, I mean, okay, so for example, the only reason that I even started posting on Instagram, well, I got Instagram back when it first came out, so not when it, now it's completely different than that.
Right.
But when it first came out, it was mostly college students taking pictures of their cats and food and stuff. So, like, my first few pictures on Instagram are like that. And then I noticed that there were some yoga people on there, and I had just started practicing at home, and I wanted to log my practice, because one of the reasons that people stop practicing yoga at home is because it's hard to tell your progress over time.
Correct.
And it's very isolated. It's a, which is a really beautiful experience ultimately, but can be very alienating. And so there are a lot of people who are like, yeah, I practiced for a while and then I stopped. And I think that it can help if you have something. You don't have to post the photos anywhere, but I think it's helpful to log it. So, and I maintain that, well, you know what, let me not even. So I had been posting for quite some time and really only looking for feedback from other yoga practitioners. And it seemed like it was predominantly very serious practitioners or teachers giving one another feedback about their practices. And I noticed over time that the feedback wasn't really people being like, oh, you know, bring your foot forward here, bring your arm up here, or anything like that. It was mostly people being like, I didn't know fat people could do yoga. And I was just like, why do you think fat people can't do yoga? Fat people do everything. Like, literally.
Yes, we do.
I'm not even the first fat black person to put pictures of themselves on the internet practicing yoga. So, like, why do you think that? And I'm just like, I guess we're dealing with a massive visibility problem. So that the social aspect is like, well, I'm already doing this thing. So if you need to see something that you think doesn't exist, then here it is. This is that thing that exists. But it's not really about, like, yeah, and then give me all of your opinions about it, too.
Right.
Because I don't, if I'm not on social media for one thing, it's that. The unsolicited opinions of strangers. And I feel like that's where it can become, like, really unpleasant.
So how do you sort of reconcile starting Instagram for yourself and your home practice, and it really just sort of being for you, and then now you're sitting on stage in front of like 300 people and there's a book out, and I mean just
how does that work?
Like, no, I mean, I understand how it works, but it doesn't seem like it's, you don't kind of want to be sort of that ambassador, but you've sort of become one.
Yeah.
Just by sheer fact of whatever.
I still feel like if the ambassadorship is there, that I'm just like standing next to it, like not standing in front of it, because I don't feel like I can stand for as many people as I would need to stand for
right.
if I was going to try to step into that role. But I also think that, so we were talking about this a little bit backstage. I had a moment a couple of years ago where I was like, I'm good on all of this. Like, I don't see the purpose, ultimately, of showing the asana, the poses in this way. I don't see that it's really, and then also, what is the reason that we're trying to get more people to practice yoga? Because I feel like I'm seeing, you know, in like studios and teachers and students just being like, everybody should practice yoga. You should practice yoga. And my thing is like, what is the reason for that? You know, is it so that we can sell more yoga mats? So that we can sell passes to studios? Like, what is, because ultimately it's just coming back to capitalism. And this is what, at least in my understanding, as yoga practitioners, that we're trying to walk away from.
Right.
And I was just kind of like, I see the role that I'm playing in perpetuating this idea of worshiping the poses, and then it also turns into this weird idolatry of individual practitioners and teachers, and I'm just like, ooh, you know, this is how we get into situations like Bikram, like how there's, you can go and Google all of this later, but like there are a lot of controversies within the yoga community that really begin because of idolatry of human beings. And I'm just like, I see this happen. I see people on social media who have been completely eaten by this yoga monster that's like, that they get off on the likes. You know, they need for people to comment. They really are feeding off of that. And again, no shade on that, because I see absolutely where that comes from. But this is not some shit that I'm trying to be a part of. So like,
right.
I found myself just like, I don't even want to do this at all anymore. But then I realized that there is some benefit to being able to show what a 21st century practice really looks like. And not just what it looks like in terms of the asana that you practice or how frequently you practice or your thoughts about even the emotional and the spiritual benefits of yoga. It's more than that. It's showing that, you know, someone who is full of contradictions, someone who sits at so many different intersections, someone who is of color, who is queer, who has to understand life through these marginalized windows. I think that perspective is really valuable, because I think that whenever a lot of people talk about yoga, they talk about it in this really like floaty, airy way, you know, where it's like, oh my God, love, namaste, this is so beautiful, like the energy is so great. And the thing is, like, I am like this, you know what I mean? Like, I get it. I see, but really, and then that gives people the impression that yoga is all about like being happy and things being beautiful and pretty all the time. But in my experience, the practice is really about understanding that there is always going to be good and bad in this life, that there's always going to be dark and there's always going to be light. And sometimes shit happens and it is not pretty, but that is real, you know, and that is important also. And I think that it gets so lost, that
right.
idea gets totally lost. And whenever we're like obsessed with the poses and the coconut water and the mats, that has absolutely nothing to do with this pursuit of truth. And I feel like for me, being able to communicate with other people, the only reason to even continue doing that is to show that if you're full of contradictions, so am I. If you're complicated, so am I. If you have days where you're just like acting like an asshole, so do I. And if you have complicated political feelings, that so do I. And that is yoga too. That all of this whole experience is yoga. And so that's kind of how I reconcile it. Because otherwise, I would not be doing this. We wouldn't be talking about this. Because I just don't see the purpose.
Sure. You talked about the lot of intersections you kind of meet. And one of them that we sort of both maybe fit is, as was mentioned in the introduction, you don't really look like the typical yoga.
I don't.
I know.
We don't?
I know.
I have no idea. No, I'm just kidding.
Right. So, I mean, no, but when the media, there's a very certain idea of what a yoga practitioner looks like. Same thing happens with me. I don't look like a runner.
Mm-hmm. You don't?
I know, right? But I run. Right. You do yoga, so clearly doesn't matter. So I, for just a little bit, want to talk about body positivity because I think that's also a very important thing that you and I can talk about, and I'm sure everybody in the audience can also sort of relate to. So what does that mean to you, body positivity?
So
is that the term you use?
Yeah, okay. So I understand body positivity as being kind of a separate space, from fat positivity and from fat acceptance.
I would agree.
I definitely came to body positivity through those two communities, though. So while I would not, I don't really consider myself an activist. I say advocate because I think that I advocate for these ideas, but I don't really feel as though I sit specifically in one of those spaces. But the way that I've always kind of felt a draw toward body positivity, because I feel like the core message is just, you're cool today, exactly as you are, however that is. It's not even just about being larger bodied, that it's about, you know, accepting the moles that you have been taught to hate, or the broadness of your shoulders, or the way that your pelvis sits, or, you know, the length of your legs, or the color of your skin, or the texture of your hair, or the absence and or presence of certain limbs, or, you know, the damage that has happened to your body over time. That whatever it is, it's okay today.
Yeah.
And so now that we've determined that you're okay today, where are we gonna go from here? Because in my mind, the whole reason to be body pos is so that you can move forward and then do more. So that you can say, like, dope, so I'm awesome today. What have I always wanted to do that I wasn't doing because I was waiting for this magical thing to happen? Cool, I'm going to go do that. You know, maybe it's diving. Maybe it's running. Maybe it's running, 50 miles. Maybe it's hiking this great distance. Maybe it's, and I think that whenever people... anytime that you talk about someone who doesn't look like the traditional idea of fit, whatever that is,
right,
that it's always within, like, changing your body spectrum. So it's always about, like, either losing weight or just becoming generally, like, healthier or whatever. And in my mind, that's just a really... it's just a really short-sighted way to see it, because if you can say that, like, I'm just going to show up for myself to accomplish goals because I'm a human being and I want to live this life to the fullest, that is an amazing space for growth. It's very different from being like, I have to do this thing in order to even get to another place.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I would agree with that. Not to steal the show a little bit, but we had talked about this backstage, and of course, as you're talking about this, I'm like, that reminds me of a story I just told everybody. So I started running several years ago, and didn't run in high school, didn't run in middle school. I walked the mile every single year. Hated running. Four laps right around the track. Sometimes I could get my gym teacher, they could convince me to, like, walk the straight part and, like, run the curve, and I would do that for, like, half a lap, and then when I'm, like, on the way far side of the track, I would just start walking again. So a couple of years ago, I was at a point where I decided I needed to get healthy and took up running just spontaneously. I was watching The Biggest Loser, and I'm like, well...
Which season? Oh, sorry. No, not, I'm sorry. I also
I honestly don't even remember. Yeah, I was, like, binge-watching on Hulu or something like that, so I was probably watching all of them.
Heard.
But I'm watching them, and I'm like, well, these people have Jillian Michaels yelling in their face, but, like, I should at least maybe try. Mm-hmm. So I got on the treadmill in my building, and it sucked. It was horrible because running is hard, you guys. I mean, like, running's not really fun. But at the end of it, I was like, I'm not really that bad, and I just sort of, like, kept doing it and did couch to 5K, running and walking intervals and all that stuff. Anyway, and I decided to sign up for a race. And when deciding what race I wanted to run, I was looking at locations here in Cleveland. And so for my very first race, I decided to run at the Cleveland Zoo. They get
there,
it. You don't
hills?
Get it. There are hills.
Oh, no. That's when the reaction, I was like, there's gotta be hills.
I always love
was
that
it hot
reaction.
Too? Oh, no.
Oh, yeah, it was summer, and there were hills, and I didn't realize until the morning of the race. I signed up because I'm like, animals, yay.
No. You're just, like, running past a zebra that's like, yeah, you tried it.
So, and not even that, it gets worse. So, like, the morning of the race, I'm actually looking at the course map for the first time, and I notice in the very bottom of the corner, it says, in order to get, it's a 5K, in order to get the 3.1 miles, I have to run it twice.
That's a twist. I like that for you especially.
So I go. I'm like, well, whatever. I already paid my money. I might as well go. And I came in dead last out of like 360 people. I was the last one to show up. Thank you.
That's right.
So I was talking about how this is like a very defining moment for me, only I didn't know it at the time. But I'm sort of like, all right, look, I gave running a try. This might not be for me. But I finished.
Yes. Can I ask a question, though?
Yes.
And this is something that comes up a lot in yoga. It's always like, well, I don't think I'm going to be able to do it, so it's not even worth it to try. You know, like, there's so many people that are like, you know, I see what you're saying about yoga, but, like, I tried an online class, and it was just really, really hard for me. Or, like, I tried it one time, and it's just really hard, so I guess I'm not supposed to do it.
Right.
Or this idea of coming in last. Mm-hmm. Like, that it's like, well, fuck, I mean, if I'm coming in last, I'm like, what does that even mean?
Right.
It means that you've showed up and that you did this thing.
Right.
Like, it doesn't mean anything other than that.
I've come in last 3 times. And all that means,
yes.
All that means is that on that race, on that day, I just happened to be the slowest person to show up.
You just happened
That's all
to
that
be
means.
Last. Yeah.
Like, somebody has to come in last. And the other thing, you know, and the thing is, so my book is Running with a Police Escort, because if you're running in a road race, there is a police car at the front of the pack with the elite runners, and then there's a police car at the very end. To sort of signify the end of the race. And so I have a police escort when you're coming in last. And, you know, the thing is about being last, though, you know, everyone always focuses on the first place runners and the fast people. The race literally cannot finish until I show up.
Literally.
You know what I mean? So, I mean, you just... Had I sort of thought, and even now, you know, I weigh more than I had before because mm-hmm. life happens,
life
shit happens.
Is real.
I mean, like,
yes.
Whatever.
Yes.
yes. And there, you know, but so I'm not where I would like to be with mm-hmm. my running, mm-hmm. but I'm still gonna do it.
Exactly.
Because if, like, I waited, if I was just like, oh man, I can't run that race because I'm not gonna be as fast as I was maybe 2 years ago. Okay.
You would still not be running.
I'm like,
you know what I mean? I mean, I feel like I so resent diet culture for this, because it makes this space where it's like, you can't even, it's not even worth it to do it.
Right.
Or you don't deserve to do it. And like, who doesn't deserve to feel the exhilaration of exceeding their own expectations? Like, who does not deserve that? And we're just like, it's like we're in a race for mediocrity that is so severe that the idea of like, really, I mean, like, because there's, okay, so first yoga class, I remember, first yoga class after I came back to yoga. So the first story that I tell in the book is my very first yoga class, which was a nightmare.
Mine too.
Yeah, but when I went back after a number of years had passed, it was still just like, oh my God, this is so hard. It's really hot in here. I was doing a style of hot yoga. I was just like, it's a nightmare in here. I can't do any of these poses like everyone else. Like, I'm the fattest person here. I just feel like maybe I shouldn't have even come. And then I would start to do some of the poses, and I would immediately fall over, and I would just be so disappointed in myself. And then I get to a place of thinking, like, okay, are you done now? Like, are you done complaining
yeah,
about how hard this
right.
is? Because instead of complaining about it, you could just try. You mm-hmm. might fall down. You are probably going to fall down. You're probably gonna like hit the ground and face against the pavement, hit the ground. But what if you at least just try? And that trying, that is the good stuff.
Yes.
That's the addiction.
Agreed.
And I feel like that's why ultimately you keep coming back for it. Because it's like,
where else can I go with this? What else can I do? Right. And that's the kind of goal setting that you set as a child, you know, where you're just like, I remember when I was a kid, I used to just run around for no reason. Like, I'd just be like running in circles. Sometimes you'd be like, can you time me? I'm going to run down the street. You know what I mean? Like, and it was just cause. It's not because. And then as you get older, everything is a competition. You're competing against yourself. And then when you're in school, you're competing against the other students. And then you go to work and you're competing against your coworkers. And there's never this space where you're just like, yeah, I'm just here. I'm just going to do this because it seems fun. You know?
No, I agree. I think the trying is a big part. And I remember my yoga instructor would always say, it's called a practice for a reason.
Mm-hmm. It's the truth. I mean, it's like, there's this need to be perfect all the time. It's always like, you know, I want to be like the person in the picture, right. Or I want to be like, or at least like, and then in yoga, it gets so tricky because, this is one of the inherent problems with classes is that in our society, is that because of the competition, you get into situations where people are like, I don't even care what the pose feels like to me. I don't care about this internal conversation that people are talking about. All I want to do is show the other people in this room that I can do this. And I want to make sure at least the person who's right next to me and at least the teacher, so then maybe they won't pick on me.
Right.
And like then, so the people are like holding their breath in asana because you're just like, I just want to show that I can do this. Like I don't want to. And everyone can see, you know? But like maybe like you can move your arms here so you can relax your shoulders.
Yeah.
Like that's fine. We're not keeping score for how many breaths you're holding this
right.
for. But that mentality, and it's perpetuated honestly by the fact that yoga is really firmly within the fitness space in our society, that it's
yes.
not understood as a spiritual practice. But then that's a whole other
thing.
Can of worms.
So before we not wanting to get into that whole kind of forms because it is a very different conversation. And I don't want to monopolize you because we have this lovely audience who I'm sure has questions as well. So does anyone have a question? Go ahead and raise your hand. Yes, right back there. No, it's okay.
Oh, no.
Somebody needs to
But you're
to
also
be
like
first.
Right up.
I know.
Background for a second. I actually just finished writing a kind of like, I guess what we call it, a preface to my thesis I'm going to write next year about black bodies and like different bodies and intersectionality, pushing back against hegemonic yoga discourse, and like, you know, kind of looking at that relationship. So I actually were both at the base of my thesis.
Shit, I'm sure there's people that are no, I'm just like, I'm sure there's somebody
awkward.
Who's like, well, anyway, yeah. Please, no.
It's okay. But so I thought it was really interesting that you said you didn't look at yourself as an activist, obviously,
No. You know, it's really funny living in a body that is marginalized and exoticized and fetishized because literally I'm just trying to live. I'm not trying to do anything other than show up and not hate myself in the way that our society would prefer that I do. And I mean, that's why I don't use the word activism, because to me, that is not... Like, I want to show respect to people who are out in the streets, who are at protests, who are making, what is this where you write things down and where you write signatures? What is the word I'm looking for?
Oh, petitions.
Yeah, petitions. Like, people who do that kind of work, because I'm really lazy and I don't do that, and I don't want to disrespect that, that tradition. But unintentional activism really is just living in your body unapologetically and saying that I'm not gonna dislike myself. I'm not gonna. And in the book, I talk about one of the things that really had more of an effect on me than even anything related to the rest of my physical body. But the conversation that I've had with myself about my hair has been a huge thing. Like just trying to respect my blackness and understand that as something that I don't need to be ashamed of, that I don't need to apologize for. And that's something that spits in the face of our society. It is the opposite of what they want us to think. And I feel like that if you call living in this body unapologetically activism, then yes, I'm an activist. But I don't, it's not on purpose, if that makes sense.
Yes, back there, all in the corner.
So I guess this is less of a question and more of a gratitude. But my best friend has been struggling with an eating disorder for 2 years. She decided to go into recovery. It's been a tough and beautiful process for her. And so exercise has really been hard for her because she's been hurt.
Yep.
Your Instagram account and your book have really kind of marked the turning point for her and her recovery. So I just wanted to say thank you on behalf of her and those who love her for you really being you and really being a beautiful captain in her recovery process.
You know, I have to tell you that it's very difficult for me to accept that those feelings, because I have a whole book, mental book of reasons why it's hard. But the one thing I will say is that there are so many people who identify in some kind of space of femininity who suffer from eating disorders, and it is not talked about at all. And it's seen as like, I mean, it's very much like sexual assault and abuse, that it happens constantly to so many people, and like only a handful of people really get to even have a conversation about it. So I'm just glad that we're in a space where we can talk about this openly, and it's not just like, oh yeah, this secret thing, you know, because like, I mean, trigger warning, but I mean, these diseases are so prevalent. Like they are, and I mean, alarmingly common. I'm sure that every single person in this room has a connection to an eating disorder, whether it's you or it's somebody that you know. And I just, I don't really see that dialogue happening at all so that we can work on collective recovery. So I'm glad that space is open. So thank you for sharing that.
Anyone else? Yes, right here in front.
Hi.
I just started reading your book, and I feel like you write. I feel like reading your book is just like listening to your speak. So thank you for coming over today. I think it would seem like it is now something you love to do. But what really inspired you to like take that step to write the book? Put it out there and put yourself. You were already putting yourself.
Yeah. Well, so basically what happened, a few years ago, I started getting emails, Facebook messages, Instagram comments from people all over the world being like, oh my God, Jessamyn, I see that you've started practicing yoga. How did you do it? How can I start? I've always wanted to do it, but like, I just can't quite figure out where my starting point is. And I mean, I have a whole mailbox on Gmail that is just these emails. And if you are in the crowd and you sent me an email like this, you know that I've never responded to that message, because every time that I get it, I just be like, I'm probably getting one right now from somebody. And I got one yesterday and I was like, I just wrote this book, and like, in order to get the email address, you had to go to the website. Anyway, so it's like, I get it all the time. And my response is always like, how am I supposed to answer this question right now? Like, I would literally have to write you a book. I would have to tell you about how I started practicing yoga. I'd have to tell you about all of these little details that I think are really helpful. I would have to break down the 8-limb path, because I think there are a lot of people who, you know, if you're coming from, not every yoga practitioner acknowledges or practices the 8-limb path, but a lot of people in the West do, and then there's a lot of people who just don't even know what it is, so like, I would want to talk about that. But how could I possibly sum up all of this in an email, or in an Instagram comment, or in line at the grocery store? And so it got to a place where I was just like, fuck, I mean, I've literally not answered any of these messages. I gotta do something. I should just write a book. Okay, I write a book. That's literally what happened. So it was very much like, I just want to answer this question so that anytime that somebody asks me from here on out, I can just be like, girl, you need to go to Amazon.com and type everybody yoga, and that is going to be your answer. Because I would, so on top of that question, I would always be thinking like, why are you emailing me this? Like, you could have typed that question into Google. There are literally thousands of resources about yoga. I mean, there's gotta be an answer out there for you. But then whenever I would type it in, like, you know, how do I start practicing yoga? Or what is yoga? I would be like, this is so confusing. It's confusing and I know what it is. And then I'd be like, is it a religion? Do I need to get special clothes? Is it only for white women? Is it only for white people that want to be Indian? Like, I don't understand what's happening right now, you know? So I was like, somebody just needs to say, in layman's terms, what this is. And then on top of that, I feel like, so the yoga teachers who have really had a massive impact on my own life and practice are teachers who are just really, really genuine and honest and authentic about their, about themselves. Not in a TMI kind of way where they're giving way too much information, but they're just very much accepting of their faults and about their contradictions, and they are loving toward themselves and other people. And I feel like that really is what encourages people to practice. And I felt like in order to tell this story in an honest fashion and to really say, like, how do you start practicing yoga? I also had to talk about how and why I started practicing yoga, and not just talking about why I walked into the class when I was in grad school, but going back and talking about that when my mom was sick, and talking about my issues with my hair, and talking about my problems with alcohol abuse, and all of these things that are so common. Everybody's got a family problem, got a body problem, got a substance, whether it's gambling, shopping, alcohol, marijuana, whatever the fuck it is. Everybody's got a thing. So if we can just be more honest about that, and if I can cultivate space for that, that's worth, in my mind, it's worth pushing yoga out there for that. Because I think there are a lot of people who think that they're not good enough to practice yoga, or who think that, like, they're not calm enough or flexible enough, or that they're not fitting into all these quadrants. And I'm like, do you know that none of us are, and that everybody is just trying to work on themselves? So that was the origin of the book. And it was not like, what would be a good idea? Maybe I should write a book. It was just like, man, let me write this so that I don't have to, so I don't have to do it again, honestly. Yeah.
Yes, down here.
Well, I have a newsflash.
Oh, no. What kind of newsflash?
Whether you realize it or not, you know, our paths are chosen for us. And although you call yourself not an advocate, yet you're sitting on a stage with the book and interested people, I saw you get emotional when she was talking about her friend.
Yeah.
Whether you intended or not, here we are. And it's because of you. So being humble is great, but you are an advocate, whether you want to be or not. Whether you want to put a book out there and say, shit, I don't want anymore. Well, you got one. So,
I have something to say in response to this specifically, but I don't want to, if you had a question coming at the end of it, I don't want to cut you off. Okay. Well, so this is, so it goes deeper than that. One of the weirdest things about all of this happening at the same time as my yoga practice is actually deepening is that I'm not just like doing this shit for show. It's not for the internet. This is so that I can maintain my sanity. Like, my yoga practice has and will always be for my own personal maintenance. And regardless of whether or not there are people paying attention to it, I will keep showing up for myself. And because of that, as time has gone on, I've started to look at myself in a very critical fashion. And it's made me really see aspects of myself that I think I should be critical of. And I think that, I see how easy it is to get sucked into this, into hearing nice things about yourself. And it's something that, yeah, it's something that as much as awkward as it is, and as much as it creates this like weird space of, well, I want to say something nice to you, but you're like, it's like I'm pushing you away whenever you're trying to embrace me. It's very much me trying not to sit in a space of the ego and sit in this space of, but it is not a, I think that kind of attitude is not really respected in our society, that it's seen as like, I don't really know how it's seen, but I know that it's not really respected. And I think that there was a time in my life where I would have been more eager to accept the positive affirmations of other people, especially strangers. And where does that come from? It comes from the ego. It comes from a need to please, a need to be seen. And I'm just very, very wary of that within myself. And so that's what that comes from. I wish that there was a way to, and maybe there is, maybe I'll discover it over time, but it's really just me trying not to be an asshole. But anyway, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Observation. Yeah, you know what's interesting about that is that we were kind of talking about this backstage, like about changing the mainstream yoga world and like what does that look like and how does it feel to kind of be in that space? And I don't feel an urge to change that because in my mind, that's not yoga. That's fitness and yoga clothes. And whenever I get upset about it, because it's really easy to get into a place of being like, what the? Like, there's so many people who just, I mean, like, millions of people who are confused about what is actually happening here. But then I come into a place with it where I'm like, so why do I need for people to know that I know that yoga is different? Where is that coming from? Is that coming from a space of, like, I need to hear my voice? Because that's something that I struggle with in other parts of my life, too, is, like, needing to be heard. And so it turns into this really interesting, because that's the yoga of it, is that everybody is in their place, and I feel like it's a really beautiful personal practice for me to just kind of separate from that and question why I feel compelled to express, because ultimately yoga doesn't care about this fake yoga world. Yoga's going to be yoga, has been yoga for thousands of years, and will continue to be yoga after this. When people have stopped obsessing over mats and high energy classes and leggings and all this crap, yoga will still exist. And I think that I can personally get into a space of like wanting to defend the practice and making sure that like it's like everyone knows that this is what yoga really is. But I feel like if you really do the work and if you're really looking within yourself, then you will know what yoga is. And what I need to worry about is whether or not I know what yoga is, not whether or not somebody else does. Because that, otherwise, I feel like I would just be pissed all the time. Because it's disgusting to watch. But then why, where does that feeling come from?
I think we have time for one more question. Way, way up in the corner. Someone very excited to ask a question.
I'm in this kind of context, but literally in general, I'm just trying to live my own practice. I'm trying to figure my way through it. I feel like I got enough complexities there for a lifetime. There's no reason for me to be like, you know, trying to sit into any space of like, I don't know. No. I was gonna go down a road and then I was like, let me just not. I agree with everything that you're saying in terms of it being a continuance, not like a starting point. Because I'm constantly hearing, because a lot of the communities that I've been to specifically on this tour are predominantly white yoga communities. And I think there's a tendency to be like, wow, I'm seeing so many more POC teachers and students. And this is so great. And I'm like, this is yet another example of y'all thinking that we weren't always here when we have literally always been here. And it's really, I don't consider it to be disappointing or upsetting because it's just par for the course. Like yet another space where you think that we're invisible. But like, I'm grateful that there's more visibility, and I think that I am just one of so many people. I mean, like Faith Hunter, Chelsea Jackson, Diane Bondi, like people who are out here being very, very visible. And I guess that's what's necessary. But ultimately, like I feel like, I mean, there are traditions of yoga that came up in Africa. Like there's so much that is not just about this like deeply colonialized version of yoga and deeply appropriated version from South Asia that is very, this is a whole other can of worms that we can go into, but I'm glad there's more visibility at the end. I guess I could expound upon this indefinitely, but because I'm in awe of people who have been practicing for decades, because I think there's something that it's so disappointing to me that our yoga world gets hung up on youth. That's another problem with the modern yoga world, is that it's all about like, look how young and beautiful and flexible this person is. And I'm like, look how inexperienced and unwilling to learn and unwilling to sustain stress that person is. But when you have lived through the practice, even for 10 years, you see your whole life like through, I mean, it's like, it's just, the beauty is in the depth. The power is in the depth, and I'm very, very excited. I'm excited to experience that. I hope that I am lucky enough to experience that, and I am in awe of those who have. So that's what I'm gonna leave out.
All right. Thank you so much. Other questions,
yeah.
We'll be able to answer them. Justin will be signing at the table down front. So thank you.
Thank
for coming
you.
To
thank you so much.
Yeah.
Thank you for this, and thank y'all.
Cool. Readers can sample and borrow the titles mentioned in today's episode from overdrive.com, and our library friends can add these titles to their collections and marketplace.
History is complicated. The story of human progress is long, messy, and riddled with controversies big and small. On Conflicted, we dive headfirst into history's most infamous events and contentious figures. We try and untangle the good from the bad, the fact from the fiction, and the monsters from the misunderstood. Was Genghis Khan a murderous butcher or a civic pioneer? Did the Allied powers go too far in firebombing the German city of Dresden at the twilight of World War II? And how did the Marquis de Sade acquire such a sinister reputation? And was any of it true? These are just a few of the tough questions we wrestle with and investigate on Conflicted. So if you love history or just enjoy a good story, please join me, your host, Zach Cornwell, for a fascinating new topic each and every month. Conflicted, a history podcast, is available on Spotify, Apple, or wherever else you get your podcasts. I hope to see you soon.